Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Which having a continuation, the reading from Srila Prabhupada's Shikshamrita, or letters that Srila Prabhupada has written when he was physically on the planet. And we're discussing a particular section on chanting, the importance and the result of chanting. Prabhupada's first letter we're reading today is July 8, 1969. Prabhupada writes, simply pray to Krishna that you may be able by his grace to serve him nicely. Our prayer of the Hare Krishna mantra means addressing Radha and Krishna for being engaged in their service. Hare Krishna means O Hare, O Radharani, O Krishna, please engage me in your service so that I can get released from the service of Maya. Just like a person resigns from an inferior quality of service and accepts a superior quality of service, similarly our prayer to Krishna is to give us relief from the inferior quality, which is of course Maya, and to be engaged in the superior quality of service, Krishna. Service we have to render, and the whole process is to accept the superior quality of service in Krishna consciousness. I hope to find you in good health. Regarding your recording of Nama Om and Hare Krishna, it is very good. So remember the most basic thing is that when we're chanting, we're actually saying, O Radharani, O Mother God aspect, Divine Mother, most beneficent, most merciful, who is overseeing all devotion, please engage me in the service of Krishna and your divine self, and take me out away from the temporary, from the Maya, from the absorption and the relative and the illusion, and allow me to gradually participate in the reality. So when we are chanting like that, then we are asking for service. So therefore, service must always be essential in devotion, and service is always a major ingredient of love. People don't just say, I love you, but it must be shown through their interaction, their caring for each other. And then we are taking a closer look at it, at the mantra. What we're really saying, with the engagement in your service, we're also saying, then bring before me things I need so that I can do better service. Now, if we go a step deeper, what we're really saying is, dear Radha, dear Krishna, take it away, take it away, take it away, take it away. Huh? So we're really saying, I'm here because I am holding on to so much stuff in this life and previous lifetime. And that stuff is keeping me coming back because I have to keep gripping on, I keep holding on to that, so I keep coming back to hold on different permutations, combinations of the same thing. So I'm tired of that because I've been occupying myself, cheating myself, I've been denying myself, and therefore I have created such a problem for myself, thinking that I'm getting the better thing by doing as I like rather than what Krishna wants. So now we are saying, okay, I want to enter into the umbrella of the Parampara system, which is a jet path for being able to know what I need, how I need it, and to be able to engage in service that gradually connects me with Krishna. So now I am taking a few, having the ammunition, by making the prayer, Dear Radha, Dear Krishna. Huh? We might as well be saying, please take it away, take it away. All of my doubts, fears, lusts, anxieties, attachments. So we sometimes forget that it is also our own chanting that can bring to us all the things that we need, that in many times comes in a package of confusion, or a package of anxiety, or a package of limitations, or a package of sometimes even causing desperation. But we are chanting, oh, whatever I need, bring it on, bring it on. Huh? So we can take this, all this other stuff away, take it away, take it away. And there's even a verse in Bhagavatam, that Prabhupada says, for one who Krishna favors, he takes everything away. There's a term in Bhagavatam called a kinchana. And sometimes the Lord gives special favor to someone by initially taking so much away. Adoration, prestige, financial gifts, friends, so many gifts. As Krishna is responding to the fact that, oh, you're chanting. You're chanting with some level of sincerity. All right, then let me arrange to make these adjustments. But then sometimes when the adjustments come, we, oh my God. What am I going to do then? I should go to a psychic and find out I can have this stuff taken, how I can have this thing or that thing. Or I should pray to Shiva, because Shiva gives benefits faster. Or Lord Ram, he never puts people in that kind of difficulty. Maybe I'll just find out the process of how to chant Lord Ram. After all, it's an aspect of Krishna, so it's okay. So we may forget what we are actually doing in the process. Or we may forget the potency and chant without attentiveness. We may forget the fact that the chanting is all established based on the whole culture. And that's why you kept in the same ten offenses. We were going over yesterday that those ten offenses is the rules, criteria, and regulations about how to benefit and to grow under any circumstances. But if we're breaking one after another, then to that degree, that chanting, it becomes where we're saying, take the stuff that's interfering away, but then at the same time, by the senses, we're saying, but no, not yet. Take it away. It's like he's telling someone, give you a medication, give you the injection, because you're too sick. And then when they come with the medication, they say, oh, no, not yet. Maybe I'll take tomorrow. Oh, no, not yet. I think I'll wait a while. I think after dinner. Well, it's so late now. Let me just do it tomorrow. So, therefore, the creeper does not grow sufficiently. And there's signs when the creeper is not growing. These are obvious signs. When the creeper isn't growing, you lose, first thing you lose enthusiasm. Nothing seems to feel right. You feel a natural emptiness. Because it's just like you're sitting down at the table and you're not eating. You smell the aroma, but you're not eating. So it's frustrating. You're hungry, and you're sitting down, but you cannot eat. You know the food is in front of you. And when the creeper gets weak, we automatically lose reverence for each other. And we start looking less and less at the community or the outward arrangement of how we can try to encourage others, how we can make sacrifices for others, for Krishna, for Guru, for preaching, etc. And it becomes more and more my mind, my idea, my desire, my fear, my position, my consciousness, my health, my this, my that. All of those things are there. There's no question. It's all part of being in this world. But the important thing is the emphasis. As the creeper gets weak, emphasis becomes more and more on the I, less and less on the collective, to the point that then everything becomes the I. And that is such grossness that if it goes on and on and on, it can even become, you know, the demonic mentality. Because the major thing about the sinner or the demon is that the demon is constantly trying to see how to control, manipulate, and exploit all things, everyone, even to stamp out theism, because theism means to think of God and to think of your neighbors as yourself. Huh? Theisticness or religiosity, spirituality, it actually means now to be seeing yourself as part of a unit and to be in selfless, more and more orientation of service and compassion. And so corruption, sin is the opposite of that. So more and more, Maya's attempt is to make us constantly just become more self-centered. And then we lose the ability to recognize the divine help and mercy of the Lord, because now we hold the teacher within ourselves. And it's hard, because normally we think, if I just think of myself, then I'll be okay. If I don't take care of myself, then who's going to take care of me? And that is true, but then we have to look at what is the real self. Then if we take care of the real self, then yes, everything will fall in place. But if so much of the real self is not there, every day we eat, huh? Every day we bathe. Each day we put on some clothes. So we're constantly taking care of the physical. But what about the real self? Can each person say, every day I fed my soul? If you haven't, then you're a cheater. Today, did I read? Did I hear a class? Did I listen to a tape? Today, did I do something that helps me to realize more that this material world is a temporary environment, and this material world is a place of incarceration, and so I have to be careful that I don't become more incarcerated, but each day move more toward parole or liberation. This day, that I feed myself as I am a part of the Lord, can I clearly see that after my day is over, that I did something to glorify the Lord? And if we can feel yes, yes, yes on those things, then we will naturally have more well-being feeling about ourselves, because then we're going more to the root. Otherwise, it's just like the idea of watering the plant on the tree. You're watering the leaves, so that has to be done. But actually, by watering the root, then the whole tree is watered. Like the other day, one of my grandbrothers came to see me. He had all these gorgeous plans about food disaster, how to form an organization, asking me and a few other people to be on the board, where the movement involves itself in various types of disasters. It's like a Red Cross, so to speak, where we have grants and other things to go in to see people, to help do some services, this or that, but to be on a kind of a hotline, you know, for disaster. And there's so many really nice things, you see. But then at one point, I just brought in, in terms of your schedule and what you're saying, are you changing your rounds? But in a tactful way. And he went on and on and on. I'm answering too many letters. I got so much mail coming. I'm doing this, doing that. I'm overseeing this project. I don't always have time. And then I just said, you know, very politely, but firmly, we can make all kind of plans, but if Krishna is not pleased, they will fall apart. Even if they build up temporarily, they will fall apart. So you can go out and you can hustle all day long. He was in Washington going to agency trying to get grants, the information. But you can hustle all day long, day after day, week after year after year, and put so much energy and just do nothing more than have good intentions and some aspirations and little maintenance and not get off the ground. I said, but if Krishna is pleased, then even someone, some philanthropist, some organization can practically sponsor the whole thing. And even if materially nothing manifests successfully from a material point of view, but if Krishna is pleased, then you get the same result as if you had manifested. So I was kind of a little shocked, and I was thinking, how easy it is for any devotee to get so caught up in the day-to-day things that they forget the real basis that keeps our livelihood, that keeps us successful in spiritual life, or keeps us connected, or lets the creeper grow. And that is a difficulty, because the senses and the mind immediately are kind of forced to deal with the, you know, with the immediate external. But we forget that everything that is externally manifested has come from the internal. In other words, the external is just a manifestation of the internal. So if we are just dealing with the external, then we're missing the fact that that is just the symptom, that is just a manifestation of what has now come about due to certain things that are more internal. So if we address the internal, then we're dealing with the present, because we're addressing that, but we're making more arrangements for the future. And that's why, in one sense, a spiritualist is really a product of the future, because we are more and more involved in the process of investing. And so you're investing by leading a spiritual life, by being austere, by standing around, by being faithful, kind to others, by being a well-wisher of human civilization, by trying to engage in conscious raising. And so that then gradually matures and sets in. And if that sets in, then it produces certain types of results. Just like now, many people are in a tremendous suffering condition, because in their previous life, they were like so simple. Somebody was a big politician or a king or something. But then they were so much exploitive, or so much abusive, or so much minimizing the fact that God is there and arranging. And so they were then, instead of investing, they were just taking so much away. And then later, they're bankrupt, spiritually bankrupt. And then life is like tremendously difficult for them. Now just keep in mind that God is fair. So why did he let somebody spend almost their whole life homeless? Or somebody is on an iron lung? Or someone is in pain every day from serious cancer? That if you could follow the pattern in many cases of a person's previous life, you will see exactly why certain things have unfolded like this. You think the Lord wants to see somebody lying in the bed, or they're bedridden, they can't get up, they can't hardly do anything, they can't bathe themselves, you know, they can't eat, they gotta eat by tubes, they gotta be bathed, they gotta be washed. You think the Lord wants to see somebody like this? No. But if we follow it back, we'll see that there are certain particular things that have added up the individual chose to do with their own free will that later has come upon them. And given that, you know, life is such a continuum, then what we do today and then what happens next week, it's not such a long time span away. It's all part of our same existence. Otherwise we can say, well, it doesn't matter now, because what I do now is what I experience. What happens later happens later. It's not the case, because it's grading into each other. So therefore, the devotee who remains vigilant, intent, strict, sinners, is just arranging right around the corner to be able to get more of what he's asking. Dear Radharani, dear Krishna, please intervene and take the necessary things away, so that your love, which is always existing, is attainable. But then, all of this just sounds like faith, huh? Just have faith. Just tolerate. Just persevere. Just endure. But why not? Any little thing you do, there's some strategy, some criterion, some faith proposition involved. So why not? Like if you're going to make an investment, if somebody says, if you invest in this bank, you're going to get a 10% interest return. If you invest in this bank, you're going to get 20%. You say, well, I don't know. It's a risk. Yes, it's a risk. But if you invest in this bank, 20%, it's a risk. But what possibilities is a greater chance or a greater benefit than what's available. If we have to risk everything we do, then why not make an investment where the returns are offered many, many times over? And there's no greater return than the chance for eternality no greater return than the chance where never again we have to be in a state of lamenting, of struggling to survive, in a state where anxiety is the basic thought pattern, you know, of our daily experience. So, what is too difficult to do in order to be able to be received by the Lord? But we have to be chanting, taking those 10 principles that we mentioned about to senses, offenses to be avoided. And as we do that, we have to be in the consciousness that even if I am not successful in this thing or that thing, so be it. But I will always be successful because I will never give up my intense desire in trying to please the Lord and serve with all that I have, even though sometimes the results may not come out the same way or may not manifest. And then we think that just if somebody can offer you something and they may be bluffing, they may say, if you do this, you know, I'll give you $10,000 or I'll give you my car. They may be bluffing because maybe the car is not theirs, or maybe they're not even going to give it to you after you do it. But the Lord doesn't bluff. So then when he makes his affirmations or his firm statements about do this, and I'll do this, then he means just that. One, because he doesn't bluff, but two, because he has it in his control to make something happen. Sometimes someone can really have good intentions. You do this, I'll give you this, give you that, but they really don't have it in their control to give it to you. So they want to, but even after you do it, you want to get it, they want to give it to you, but they're not really in control. And so the population is so strong. But the Lord is in control of everything. And therefore, when he is saying, do like this, then he is also the one who's allowing Maya to come like this. He's the same one who's allowing us to have to experience sickness, disease, old age, based on what button that we press by the resulting of our consciousness. So, this is those things are happening. We can now make a shift by what? The Bhagavad Gita says, one can become Krishna conscious in millions of lifetimes, or literally in a second. Meaning everything is based on the quality of faith. But a person who does not have a warriorship mentality of perseverance and determination, they can't have much faith because things will bother them too much. Or if we don't have more confidence in God, or if we don't have more sense of well-being about ourselves, then we will be very faithless. Prabhupada says, regarding your recording of Nam Om and Hare Krishna, it is very good, and everyone says that it is technically all perfect. So your endeavor to induce the Beatles to cooperate with us is successful to a greater extent. Now, when I shall go to London, I shall carry with me various other recordings sung by me, and these recordings can be attuned to the same technical perfection, and under my direction we can produce at least 12 Hare Krishna recordings and varieties of tunes. This is referring to back in 1968-69 when the devotees recorded a record with George Harrison and some of the Beatles, and it became number one in England on the charts at one point. And so Prabhupada was encouraging them to try to do a few more recordings in a professional way with George Harrison. I'm sure people will like them very much. And so these devotees who went there to England, for instance, Prabhupada just sent, you know, it was 2 household families, and they went there, and they didn't even hardly know anybody, but they just went trying to preach a little bit and just trying to make little sacrifices. And then what happened is that they got in touch, met George Harrison, and he was very favorable. And then he even arranged for them to live in his mansion. And then later Prabhupada came to visit Europe, to visit England, and then Prabhupada and devotees all stayed there for some time. And then later, they made this record, and they made some finances, but then George Harrison went and bought, you know, this beautiful mansion, Bhaktivedanta Manor, and gave it to devotees for £1. So this big temple that devotees have in England, in a very exclusive area, with lots of land, and beautiful, gorgeous building, it was given to devotees. And it was all based on really the dedication of just two householders who just were given some instruction, and they went out to search, and now there's thousands of people, especially during festivals, who come to that temple. It's a very popular place in England. Even now, to the point that there's litigation going on, but this is such a rich area, the whole township is complaining all the time. Because, you know, English sometimes can be pretty class conscious and pretty prejudiced. And so, because there's so many people of color, especially Indians, coming in that neighborhood, they don't like it. Like on John Mosque and other festivals, Ram Nomi, sometimes they may have, you know, 100,000 people. It's becoming really big. 30,000, 40,000 people who may come in 1 or 2 days' time. And so it means so many, so much traffic and so many people coming in this very exclusive neighborhood, they don't like it. So the courts have been for some time trying to see how to limit devotees being able to use the facility, you know, for public reasons, for public services. But their whole project was given for just $1, £1. I am sure people will like them very much when they are presented through Mr. Harrison and his company. I'm very glad to learn that Mr. Harrison was playing on harmonium and guitar. Divya Jaya and Gurudas were playing kartals. Jamula and Mati were singing. And you were playing Dear Ruba, some kind of instrument. Kulasekar is so nice, a cold player. I thought it was being played by Mukunda. Why do I not find the name of Mukunda? I'm so very glad to learn that this record is being played on some first-class radio stations all day. Whenever you go, wherever you go, people congratulate you and chant Hare Krishna. This is very encouraging. Actually, the Krishna conscious movement, inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya, is the only panacea for these diseases of the material world. The missing point is forgiveness of God. This is not a new thing, because the reason for our material existence is forgiveness of our relationship with God. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very mercifully reclaimed the fallen souls, especially in this age, by the shortcut method of chanting the Krishna mantra. By repeating chanting of this transcendental sound vibration, dirty things in the mind become cleansed, especially chanting in congregation. Because when you chant only by yourself, what happens is that too much of your own mind seems to dwell in a little more. Because the mind is very powerful, and so many thoughts are coming up, so many things you want to do, whatnot. So chanting doesn't have as much potency. But when you're chanting together, then you're chanting, but also around there's other people chanting, and their sound vibration is raising the atmosphere, and their sound vibration is also, the Lord's name, is also penetrating to your consciousness as well as yourself, and it reminds you or puts you more in a collective energy of the holy names. So it's more of a bathing, more of a cleansing takes place. When the modes of passion and ignorance come in, although the process of cleansing is not yet completed, the modes of goodness become prominent. This means that the propensity of being lusty and greedy diminishes, and one can be fixed up in devotional service of the Lord. When one is fixed up, now you'll notice that corresponds also. When the creeper is weaker, or when the faith is weak, then all the body propensities also proportionally increase. Another way of saying it, when the conscience becomes dull, or when you're in a low air, or when Maya comes in, then you find that the spiritual things, desires for them decrease, but the material things increases. One will find that they will have much more desire to eat and eat and eat. One will find that one will feel much more sexually agitated. One will feel much more self-conscious. All of these things directly correspond with the weakening of consciousness. And weakening of consciousness, then any habits that we used to have or whatnot, then they come back on us. Because it's as if the shield of protection is actually being penetrated. And since we are pleasure seekers by nature, then if the pleasure is not coming from the basic tenets of devotional service, then of course, as we said, there will be an emptiness, and then we'll what? We'll then start much more now, so much enjoying television. We'll get so much into just things that basically don't really, at the end of the day, give us any higher consciousness about serving God. And then that's time. It's actually wasted. If we're watching TV or going to a movie, it must also be a part of the revolutionary activity of conscious raising. That if there's not some reason that we're going to learn something to increase our devotion, then it just becomes sense gratification. And as sense gratification sets in, then it produces more desire for more sense gratification. And it creates impotency. But when the consciousness is dull, then we die for those things. We feel that we need them. We even feel happy by intoxicating ourselves by some mundane considerations. When the modes of passion ignorance come in, and especially we see that how television just zaps you with so much motor energy. You know, every scene is something relative, something exploitive, you know, something sensual. Practically these days, they can't make a movie that's popular without violence and without some exploitation and without sensual stimulation. And if one is getting fed with that, then one's character begins to become organized in that way. And the unfortunate thing is the devotee who is to try to be above the disease of the temporariness, the disease of the prison lifestyle, gets dragged right back down to that atmosphere. And we lose the whole emergency consciousness. So I was noticing from what he does that practically all day he's associating with people who are non-devotees without realizing that when you do that, even more so, you have to recharge yourself. Because one will begin to internalize so much of the mindsets of such people without even knowing to what degree that impact is taking place. Even more than living in the temple or having devotee association all the time, when there is such association with the materialist, then there must be even more active cleansing going on in such a way. And I was felt sorry because I saw that even after bringing up about chanting rounds, that he wasn't going to do it. That it was as if, but that's for people who are not as busy as I am. Or that is okay when you're not working. But because I'm working, it's also canceling out the things that maybe I would have to do or be responsible for. But I'm working and the Lord will say that's okay. So I thought, oh, this is dangerous. Because then, by not asking the Lord to take things away that are unnecessary for you, then it means one is not really asking to come back. One is not really asking to experience love of the Lord. One is not really positioning themselves for the blessings of Srimati Radharani. And that comes as we are asking for service, and then she arranges to allow that service to be given to Krishna. So often we must be very careful to see where our priorities are, careful to see how much we are recharging ourselves, and very much looking at whether we are beginning to minimize some basic things that we know, but we can rationalize in such a way. Once we start rationalizing those things, then even when we hear some instruction, we have to fight it by either trying to deny the speaker, or we deny that it doesn't apply for us. And there's only so many combinations of Maya. So there are different forms of how Maya affects everybody. Maya is also eternal in the material world. There's only so many combinations of the modes of nature, how they interact. And so it is easy to evaluate certain schemes of Maya based on various types of symptoms. The 16-word Maha Mantra is nobody's invitation. They are authorized mantras in different Puranas, which are Vedic authorities, especially in the Kali Santara Upanishad. It is stated, that this 16-word mantra is the holy name of the Supreme Brahma for deliverance of the fallen souls. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted Haridas Thakur chanted 24 hours. All the Goswamis and Acharyas chanted. Raghu Maharaj chanted. Following all these footsteps, we are also chanting. So they are authorized by the civic succession. And all of us must chant at least 16 rounds daily to keep us fit in the Krishna conscious transcendental platform. In the last paragraph, next letter, of your letter, you have mentioned that you are irritated at the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, like some people, but rather you like it, or that you are not irritated. It has given me much satisfaction, and I am sending here a copy of our magazine, Back to Godhead, number 28, in which you will find how the students like this chanting of the mantra. Actually, it is very pleasing to the heart. This is the easiest and recommended process in the Vedas. In the Brihat Naradiya Purana, it is clearly stated that it can save the people from the problems of materialistic existence. Western culture is monotheistic, but they are being misled by the impersonal Indian speculation. The young people of the West are frustrated. We'll read it as the last letter. Are frustrated because they are not diligently taught about monotheism. They are not satisfied with the process of teaching and understanding. This Krishna conscious movement is a boon to them because they are being really trained to understand Western monotheism under authoritative Vedic systems. We do not simply theoretically discuss, but we learn by the prescribed methods of Vedic regulations. But I am surprised to see that in the last paragraph of your letter, you say, just one thing is coming to me also. Sometimes we use personal cases because, we don't want to embarrass people. Sometimes people feel a little embarrassed when we use their personal cases. But we do it all the time because we don't hold any secrets. What we say in private, we also say in public. Unless it is a particular problem someone is having, then that we don't discuss, obviously. But similar situation happened that same day. The devotee was saying, oh, the devotee who, like Leela, he drove the devotee from the train station. And the devotee was saying, how nice that devotee is who drove me. And I said, yeah, nice person. Why are you saying that? He said, well, he had Prabhupada's tape on, he was chanting. And I was thinking, but that's normal. But then what I realized is that he's coming out of environments where that is not normal, where people are not so meticulous about chanting, not so meticulous about hearing. They're not so meticulous about, not talking, music gossiping. So when he wasn't talking, he was chanting. Which is, a natural thing when a devotee is keeping a consciousness of priority about being a devotee first. But then when that is not so much there, then of course one cannot have spiritual life more or less like a religion, that on Sundays or Fridays some religious thing is done, then the rest of the day there's no focus, no concentration on any type of commitments or regulations, etc. Maya very rarely just comes head on to anybody. Maya sneaks in and then settles in a little more and a little more and a little more. And then the way you start thinking and the way you start talking becomes completely foreign to the actual nucleus of what constitutes, devotional mood. It doesn't just come like boom, that's rare. If it comes on boom so heavy, it means the person is like super dull. Maya usually has a sneak in, like espionage. You come in this way, that way. But what about this? But this is okay. A little of this is all right. And then next thing you know, you become more and more involved in minimizing certain principles or certain things that normally you would be more, sort of attentive to. Maya comes in a little like this, and next thing you know, you have cut so many corners that there's no corner to cut anymore. Sometimes we, suppose expediency, we make some adaptations. Then if we're not careful, it goes on until Krishna is completely out of the picture. And our intelligence becomes dominant. Or our senses become dominant. The engagement of the great souls freed from delusion and perfect in the realization of God are described here. Satatam Kitayanto, Mom. They always Satatam chanting Kitayanto, my glories, and Nitya Yukta Upasate, always worshiping me. So I do not know how you can be indisputable. And if you want references from the Vedas, I can give you many. In the Vedas, the chief transcendental vibration, Omkar, is also Krishna. Pranavaha, Omkar, is the divine substance of the Vedas. Following the Vedas means chanting the Vedic mantras. And no Vedic mantra is complete without Omkar. In the Mukunda Upanishad, Omkar is stated to be the most auspicious sound representation of the Supreme Lord. This is also confirmed again in the Atharvaveda. Omkar is the sound representation of the Supreme Lord and is therefore the principal word in the Vedas. In this connection, the Supreme Lord says, Pranavasava Vedeshu, I am the symbol Om in the Vedic mantras. The goal of Vedanta study, therefore, is to know the Supreme Lord, Krishna. This point is stressed in Bhagavad Gita. So we know the goal of all scriptures, all yajnas, rituals, all knowledge is ultimately to have a better understanding of our relationship with the Lord, and of course, you know, how to serve the Lord. That's why we often explain, grow with each experience. We've been helping some of our devotees because the devotees in Africa are very quarrelsome sometimes, you know, with each other. And some devotees are beginning to learn that because there's a fighting mentality, they're beginning to learn that you don't have to fight by arguing back with somebody. You don't have to fight by showing your physical strength. You know? You even have physical fights sometimes. But you don't have to fight by trying to upstage somebody. But if you have the tendency to fight, okay, you can use it. But you can fight by defeating somebody with, you know, whips of love. Sometimes somebody can be like really, you know, antagonistic towards you and be attacking you and try to, you know, demise your character and this and that. And you can defeat the person just by being to that degree even more kind. And what will happen is that you'll defeat the individual because, one, they will feel foolish with such attacks. But even more important is that your performance or involvement will keep you from being, you know, remorseful and demoralized, because even two people fight, doesn't matter who wins, both people get scratches and bruises and whatnot, so nobody really wins. Both people got their clothes torn. See, I beat him. I saw a guy yesterday. I went around the block to one store, and I saw someone used to be with us. We had the restaurant over on 8th Street, and he was kind of a street man. But we would give him some food. He used to come in at nighttime sometimes and sweep the floor. So he recognized me 15, 16 years back. And he said a few words and asked me, how was he doing? And he told me that about a year or so after we closed the governor restaurant, he got into a fight. That somebody was in the parking lot. Suffering from that, but I'm telling you, I beat that guy good. You know? It's like, oh, that justified it, huh? It makes his now he's living with this problem for the rest of his life. But his satisfaction is that guy cracked me, and he gave me this problem. But I mean, I beat him good. So I mean, who benefited from anything? That such involvement, of course, you know, everyone actually loses. But as we are chanting more seriously, as we're asking Radharani and Krishna to take things away, then we know that they're taking, things are unfolding. And so even if we have some kind of argumentative mood with someone, then we just kill the negative, or we kill their nonsense with kindness. Huh? It's a powerful weapon. And it's a better weapon than using the same weapon that somebody else is using, And it's a better weapon than even if you defeat the person, you also are hurt and damaged by it. Because the people get into arguments and they both offend each other, apparat, and then less and less do they have the enthusiasm to do whatever services they're doing for the same guru, for the same Krishna, for the same, you know, same community. So everyone suffers in such a way. But if somebody becomes a little dull, or they forget, and they want to be argumentative or whatnot, or they hold some grudges like this or like that, then at least someone should be a little more sharp about the science of devotion and the science of acceleration and the science of not getting stagnant and slowed down by your own maya or somebody else's maya. But most important, the science of compassion, which allows you to be able to give more love and devotion, and by doing that you always receive more. The more that you are living your life in the way that you're giving, then you will receive more. And the more you enter into the whole realm of chaos, then what you have is more chaos. So sometimes you have to do like that. I just got a nice letter to my God brothers thanking me for my Vaishnava Vedika, this or that. And several of them who were writing it and saying that, they had literally tried to kind of attack in some ways. But you didn't accept the attack. Somebody attacks you, then you decide whether you're going to accept it or not. You don't have to accept it. Once you accept that it's an attack, then you have to defend yourself. Then you have to do your punching. And you have to do your shouting. And you have to do your writing. And you have to do your defending. But if you don't accept it as attack, then you don't have to act on it that way. And you have a chance to serve someone who's trying to attack you by hopefully reminding them that this is not necessary. This is interference. This is a disturbance. This is below you and below me both. So let's not get ourselves, you know, in the mud by this kind of thing. Right? You know, swinging in the mud. And these are just simple principles of even sociological organizational interactions, but especially spiritualists be more concerned because we're more or less living on behalf of trying to have spiritual community. We're living in the idea of trying to prepare ourselves for living in the spiritual world in the real community of selflessness. If we don't become more expert in practicing it now, then to that degree is a disqualification for us to perform and function in the real our real home. And the more we're able to do that, the more we're qualified for being in a resident of the spiritual world. And so the chanting has much to do with reminding us, keeping us, calling Krishna, take it away, Radharani, take it away, any unnecessary things. But after we chant, we must be ready then to respond to things that happen or come around us with the consciousness of devotion and not think, but the chanting is one thing, and now the service is something else, and now my doing this is something else, and doing this. So this is my family, this is my job, this is my social self, this is my political self, you know, this is my spiritual self, and this is my fraternal self. Some people, they have so many selves, you know, they're a different person in all different categories without putting it all together. And therefore, their lives are very incoherent, because when they're with their friends, they're still one side, and then they're at work, there's another side, and then they're in their family, there's another side, and when they are in a religious environment, there's another side. But no, we have to be spiritualists who happen to be in this environment, who happen to be there, or we're doing this, we're doing that, but the same basic foundation is there, etc. In this way, there's more holistic growth. Otherwise, we create so much of a schizoid type of mentality. We're all fragmented. And then sometimes we're going to be more of one self than another self. And we're going to be very kind of disappointed, you know, with our own self. Because we'll feel as if we're not honest. We won't be honest. Or we'll feel like cowards. Because in one environment, we'll say, well, after all, you know, I can drink or smoke here, take do this, do that. Because really, nobody knows that I'm a devotee. Or on my job now, I can kind of, you know, yakky and, you know, a few little sexual jokes and a little this, a little that, and a little bit of promiscuous activity, and, you know, one or two girlfriends on the side, it's okay. Because that's part of my life is there. And this is the other part of my life. I'll keep that side straight. But it's the same person. Same person. Same Lord in the heart watching each activity. And the same person is getting a grade for each thing. Like you're in school and you get a grade for math, and a grade for science, and a grade for history. So the report card is showing your grades. Yes, they add up, then you have an average. So in such a way, we're not just thinking, well, I may fail this and I fail that one, but that's okay, because that's something else. But that's your report card now. That's what you have. So I think we'll read this last, this is very short one of this time. Yes, because the transfer of sound vibration directly appeals to the soul. So it doesn't do all kind of things to the mind and to the body necessarily, but it's appealing to the soul. And then later, as more and more notions happen with the soul, then it begins to manifest outward, the effect. Therefore, everyone will take it if by vibration is made by a pure devotee. We should therefore try to fix up our minds to remain in our spiritual position by chanting and following the regular principles. Both in our American and European centers, things are improving. I hope you shall also do the needful. Regarding Mr. Ginsberg's article, yes, it may appear if it is followed by an adequate refutation. But kindly make the refutation very strong, then that will be nice. I'm adding some points that you may elaborate on. As you say, Krishna is identical with his name. That means that his name has the same qualities as himself. Satchidananda. Knowledge, Satchidananda. No mundane vibration, excuse me, is eternal. Otherwise, why does it grow tiresome and have to be changed every other week? Nor do mundane songs produce real knowledge or bliss unending. Also, this transcendental vibration purifies one. Anyone can see practically how our students are becoming purified, but the chant of the material songs are not necessary. Ginsberg says these words are physical, is a frankly physical universe. In other words, I guess Ginsberg was saying the mantra is like hypnotic, it's physical, and that any sound, you can use has the same effect. Now people think any mantra that you use, it's just a matter of just focusing the mind and it'll have the same effect. But no, because different sounds have different qualities. Or different sounds connotate, different meanings. And as you vibrate that sound or connect with that sound, then you connect with some of the essence of what it actually represents. So when we vibrate, the mantra, and we're connecting with the position of the Godhead. And because we are addressing Hare or, Mother God at first, Radharani, or we are preparing ourselves to meet Krishna in that way. So we chant in the consciousness of how that we should chant in the consciousness of desperation, consciousness of a child who is like lost and wanting his mother or daddy to come and to, bring him out of the forest. So we chant in that spirit with the consciousness that it's about service, and we're asking the Lord to take away the illusions, the fears, the doubts, the things that are unhealthy in our lives. So if one is not ready for God to become more active in his or her life, then one should not chant. If one is thinking that they completely understand what they need in spiritual life, then they shouldn't chant. Because many things we want, but we don't necessarily need it. When you start chanting, it starts bringing things to you. For some people, it even brings them comfort, wealth, security. Some people who chant more and more, they just find that all kind of things, on the physical as well as the spiritual level, unfold. For other people, the more they chant, the more problems come to them. Because for them, they need to work through certain things. And so therefore, that chanting will bring those things first before as to let that those patterns be broken, and then there's more sense of clarity and exhilaration. It's like sometimes you take some medication and it gives you some negative feedback first. Sometimes something, it releases the toxins in your body, because the toxins are already there, and your medication it releases them, and you start feeling a little bit nauseated, a little stomach, this little stomach that, but it's really because some cleansing is going on, or something that's been embedded for a long time, now it's coming out, and now you're having, you know, indigestion, or you're having diarrhea or something. But then if you move through that transition, then you're okay. But sometimes the chanting does like that. We have been putting things under the rug. Now many people clean their house, but they don't clean it so good. They keep dust under the table, under the rug. And then one day they have to do a real heavy cleaning, or somebody comes in who's a real good cleaner. They take the chairs back, the tables, the couches, take the pictures down, they clean behind everything. But when they're doing that, really congested, there's all this dust and furniture all on the floor and everything is all a big mess. And the person comes home and says, "What? What are you doing in my house?" But they've actually cleaned it nice. They're going to put everything back. But it's more chaotic when they get all this stuff in the middle of the floor like that. So sometimes when you start chanting, all kind of stuff starts coming out. It's been put under the rug, put behind them, you know, the molds or whatnot, or behind the couch. And so some people then they say, "Oh, I don't have a chair anymore." And I used to feel peaceful because you had all this stuff under the rug. You didn't get it out. You just did a surface cleaning and then closed the door and went on. So you can do with two things. You keep it filthy and just close the door and act like it's okay. Or you dive in and really start, you know, trying to get to the heart of the matter. So we actually try, you know, to get to the heart of the matter. Then we really feel, you know, so much better in that sense. Because then we've made a real change. And although initially it is complicated, because initially we have to put more energy into trying to get to those subtler things. But once we have addressed those gross and subtle things, then you come into the house, or you come into the room, and you really feel better. But that's after you've dealt with the, you know, the different layers. So we'll stop here now. Any questions or comments? A lot of people, they don't like to, you know, to look at things close. But they don't like to be more genuine. They want to do everything kind of cosmetic. Just like in the earlier times, you know, in Europe, people didn't bathe. France is very popular because of perfume. Not because people were so clean and so much into sweet smelling, but because the royal class in Europe in those days, in the medieval days, they actually didn't bathe. I mean, they would just, you know, change their clothes and throw on perfume. And because their smell was so bad, they had to have very strong cologne and perfume. That's why the French perfume is like so famous, because these people were actually so trifling and whatnot. But some people, they like to do things, you know, in a cosmetic way without really, you know, addressing the real concern. But then later it comes back on you, because if you don't, you know, penetrate a situation, then you're just packing up, and at some point, then there are some disturbances, you know, because of that. So, question.
You spoke of compassion and kindness. Sometimes when we're trying to practice compassion and kindness, it gets tinged with patriotism and when you're being condescending. Yeah. How do you avoid that?
Because one should have the mood of love and action, of looking for chances to serve, to relate, to say a kind word, to do a kind deed, but not in the sense that, well, I'm going to be kind to you, I'm just going to tolerate you, you know? Or, you know, it's not in the mood that you're doing something good to somebody or helping somebody because you are superior, or you're just being super righteous and you're just tolerating somebody else's nonsense. Even to use that kind of a wordage, that sort of mentality is not good. Even if you see that somebody has lost control and you're a little bit more in control, but to think that I'm just going to tolerate you is not proper compassion. It's that I am your God brother, I am your God sister, I am your soldier, loving soldier in warfare, and I see that you are wounded. And therefore, I see it as also part of my duty to assist you. Not that you are in a nonsense situation and I'm just going to tolerate you, you know. I'm just going to show you that I'm better than you. Not in that mood, but that I see it as a call for service, a need or a call, really a call for love. Because really when people are anxious about each other, it's really a call for love. Nobody wants pain. Nobody wants confusion. Nobody wants anxiety. Even people who like to make confusion, they do it because they want attention. They want love. So it's all based on the same thing. So when we evaluate it from that deeper perspective, then we don't get too imbalanced by someone treating us like this or saying like this, seemingly denying our feelings. We realize, oh, there's a symptom there of someone who's who the Lord is giving me a chance to do some service. I see there's a need there. Let me see what I can do. In the spirit, that it is something about me that's causing this person to act in that way. And then that takes away from the individual feeling, I'm just going to tolerate this nonsense person. Because when you think about it and you help somebody in that spirit, they don't benefit to the same extent, because many times people can feel, you are just trying to help me because you want to show that you don't have that stuff. You know, sometimes people have a way of parading their own position by coming in quick to help you, to show you, so you're like that, but I'm like this. All right? And if someone feels that, they're not going to feel motivated in the same way. Since more communication is going on subtly than grossly, then what you're really holding in is what you're connecting stronger with the person with. And if you're having good intention and you act externally on that, but internally you're really holding desire to help and to share and to grow with the person, then even if their ego tries to blot it out, penetration will take place. And at a later time, the person will be able to respond on it. The ego is very dominant. Even when some loving help or concern is there, the ego will procrastinate, will put it on hold. You know, there are many people who, when you give them some instruction, or someone tries to help another person, or even authority tries to bring something out, they can't hear it at first. Because they're not in the habit of accepting the fact that they make mistakes so easily. Or they're not in the habit of growing fast. Or they're more in a pattern that they learn from sort of calamity, chaos, abruptnesses. They learn from the hard school of knocks. That's a slow way to learn, but most people learn that way. And that's why we're telling some of you that when you discuss things with each other, sometimes just write it down. Because everybody wants to grow, and everyone is being used to help each other. But many times, we will just think that something is happening extemporaneously or by accident, and it's not. There's a reason for it. So if we're writing something down and we discuss with someone and then we try to analyze it, try to work on it later, or sometimes just write it down and put it away, because even the next few days you're still going to be intense about the situation. And then later you'll be surprised to see how much Krishna is constantly giving each person a chance to help them and get out of their stuff. You'll be shocked as you begin to just take everything that happens in your life as something for a reason. Then we want to be amazed to see how much that the Lord is constantly trying to help everyone, and you'll be shocked to see how often we refuse that help. Any other questions?
Hey, well, Srila Krishnapad, what is actually meant by the transcendental sound vibration? I understand the source of it, but what does it actually mean? Does it mean if everything else was silent, we would only hear Om, or what does that mean?
No. Transcend means to rise above or go beyond or to penetrate. So transcendental sound vibration literally means sound vibration that is presently imported into this arena, that it has come from higher realms and is now accessible here. Or transcendental sound vibration is able, while here, to penetrate the mold to the coverings of the relative world, or the three modes of material nature. So transcending literally means that which either can come into the prison, keeping in mind the world is like a reformatory prison, that which can come into the prison and give benefit, or that which can be accessed within the prison that can reach outside?
Srila Kashyapa, we see that in all traditions, the spiritual teachers, the gurus, the saints, they're all basically saying the same essence. Give up sense gratification, surrender to God, develop more love for God. But how can we tell the difference between a person that perhaps cannot surrender to what a teacher is saying because of their desires or because of their attachments or whatever, as opposed to lack of faith in that teacher?
The same thing. Who has faith in anybody? If we were strong agents of faith, we wouldn't be here. In other words, we question God's love. If we can't have faith strong in God, you think we can have faith in other people so easily? Nobody has faith in anybody in the material world, in general. But that's what we're trying to work on. We're trying to work again in having faith in the Lord. And because we have faith in the Lord, we have understanding that ultimately God is controlling everything. And therefore we have faith that the Lord is not a cheater. You know, when you do something and you're not reciprocated based on that, then that's like cheating. It's like now the common people working so hard, they're getting so few benefits, but the power elite, they're just draining everybody. You know, less than 5% of rich and super rich controlling over 95% of all the assets in America. So constantly people are being cheated. They're being cheated. Their pain insurance heavy. And when they have some accident, the first thing the insurance company has to do is try to find every way possible not to give you. All right? Even though they've signed you on, they're supposed to be concerned about you. But as soon as something comes up, they have to try everything possible to see why not to give you. And if they can't find a reason, then they have to give you. All right? The pensions are set up in such a way that most people will never, you know, receive their pensions. Everything is designed in such a way that it takes from you, and if it can't get around it, then it gives you something. You know, even the whole idea of gambling, the lottery, is to take as much money as possible and then to give a few people some of the money back of what they collected. So it's all designed as a way to smile at you and make you feel good while you're being abused or exploited in some way. You go into the store and a person says, that dress is fantastic. I mean, that's just the right color for you. The person is trying to think how many sales they can make before the day is over. And the thing is the wrong color, it fits you wrong, it's too short, too long. They say, this is fantastic. Wow, this looks nice. But the person is trained to do that, is doing that because that's, you know, their livelihood. And you have to, you know, question whether or not it's proper. You have to look and you have to ask somebody else's opinion, etc. So in almost everything that we do, from especially commerce, somebody selling something to you, they buy it one price, they sell it another price. All right? And that's business. You know, that's trading. You know, if you study close enough, you know that you're buying it at, you know, all the other stuff added on top, and they're going to make some profit. Well, the person says, for you, no profit. You know they're lying, because they couldn't exist. They were living off profit. It wouldn't be business. So now, in our day-to-day experience, we're constantly being cheated. All right? And we don't trust people, because mainly it's a struggle for survival. More and more that the commodities are in shortage, then the more there is struggle. So that is there. But we should have understanding that God doesn't cheat us. And as we try to understand that more and more, then we can deal with anything around us as a growth experience. The more that you honestly say, this is Krishna's mercy, whatever happens to you, to that degree, it really will be. Because you're just putting things right at the Lord, saying, well, Lord, I don't know what, but you, this thing happened to me, how can I serve you here? This is there, how can I serve you here? Now you made me sick, okay? So I'll take this as a chance to read more, to think more about what it means to have good health. I will be more conscientious about this, about that. Whatever happens, you can be able to make some benefit from that. But because we are also not only being cheated, but we're also cheaters, then that makes it more difficult for us to have faith in anybody and anything. And without faith, there cannot be growth. Without absorption, without faith, without intensity, there cannot be growth in anything. We're just thinking of spiritual. If you're trying to work on computers, you have no faith you can do it, you won't do anything. You'll start, oh, I made a mistake. You know, you won't do it. Your whole day will go by, and you won't have gotten one single thing done. You're trying to do some research. How do I know this author isn't know what he's talking about? You get another book. You'll get nowhere. Anything you do, you have to somehow, you know, get focused and move on in such a way. So that is unfortunate, because what is very dominantly happening now, as we enter into the 21st century, is that the agents of Maya are just trying to make everyone relative, faithless, where it's just, you know, complete anarchy, where there's no standard, no criterion, no sense of accountability. And that's what you see happening now. By all the basic fads, by the dress styles, by the art, by many of the cultural patterns, it's like everything is just relative. Do whatever seems to feel good, even at that time. And if it doesn't, it's okay. And this is the way people are being trained now. In psychology, in psychotherapy, in psychiatry, they're being trained more and more that don't get so much caught up in what's right or what is wrong, because there's no absolutes. Just deal with letting a person feel good. So if you have a phobia, all right, let me teach you how to feel good about it. If you are bisexual, homosexual, trisexual, this, that, it's all right. Let me show you how not to be having any type of incoherent feelings about this sort of thing. So they treat you how to not to be disturbed, not in terms of what is some situation that is proper versus what is improper. Because if you minimize the whole idea of the Godhead, then you naturally put everything more on a relative platform. And the more that there's an establishment of the Godhead, then you look at everything in terms of, well, what is the proper for what God has arranged, or what is proper for entering into the proper environment. And then you have stipulations and criterion, and you have more of the regulations and rules. But all of that is gradually being thrown out.
Srila Krishnapad, I hope this won't seem to be an offensive question. You've been talking about chanting this morning and the power of the Maha Mantra, the connection that is felt. I know this won't be a surprise to anyone, but I'm very undisciplined about my chanting. I seem to chant very sporadically, and most of the time when I have the urge or when I have the impulse is when I chant. And I thought if I could ask this question, which is, what do the words Hari and Rama represent, that might help me as far as being more disciplined about trying to change.
It's not offensive. This is a very devotional question. Hari is addressing the energies of God. And it can be looked at in two ways. It can be looked at as first, when you're calling somebody, you call a Mr. or Mrs. or doctor or etc. So it's like an address, you know, before you enter to the name. So it's like catching the attention or setting the stage for the vibration of the name. But Hari also is Mother Goddess, or is Radharani. And so we're actually like saying, Dear Divine Mother, we're recognizing the divine couple, the divine Godhead in masculine and feminine, you know, togetherness. And we're first saying, Dear Divine Feminine Aspect of the Godhead, or Dear Mother, Caring Mother, of all devotion, please allow me to be able to be picked up so that I can be able to serve, to come back home to, you know, to the Supreme Lord in the Supreme environment. So it's a prayer that mainly identifies the fact that we are in difficulty. We are being abused. We are frightened, we're fearful, we're struggling, We're in a very incarcerated situation. And it's unnatural. And because it's unnatural, we realize that we want to get the proper help. And so by the chanting, we're saying all of these things at once. We don't have to make a long list of the prayer that, dear Lord, please give me a better job. Help my son who's a little bit wild. My daughter who's with the wrong crowd. This, my uncle, niece. Without saying all of those things, because those things are also there, we're encompassing whatever is necessary and healthy and is best for us and others in our environment by just chanting, in essence. Now, we're also changing karmic patterns from previous lifetimes. We're discussing that sometimes people can go to a naturopath or allopathic doctor, and they can even have some, you know, relief from a particular sickness. But if the karmic patterns have not changed, then that same sickness or another sickness will also come. So the chanting then, it dives in into addressing so many of those things. And it works, but to the degree that once we now change the pattern, that we don't add back again to the negative thing. If we are changing the pattern on one hand, but then we're adding to it, then we're finding that we may move up two steps, we move back one step, we've only actually moved one step. Because we have launched ahead two, then we move back one. So our position is that as if we just move once. So sometimes we're chanting, but we're making so many offenses, or we're doing so many improper things, that even though we're chanting, we're still erasing some of the benefits. And so it just takes longer, because you're stepping very slow and very slow. And we mentioned how for many people when they start chanting, that things that were hidden under the rug or things that have been suppressed start coming out. When they start coming out, we just go on without being disturbed that now so many things are becoming, you know, kind of chaotic in our vision, because it has to come out before, you know, we can eradicate it as such. Other thing is to remember, as we said yesterday, I think you were here, maybe you had to come in. We're mentioning how people physiologically and psychically are under attack. People's metabolisms are being altered. People's immune systems are being altered. So much is going on, one, that the government knows, but if they change it, they change some of the pollution, then thousands of people will lose jobs. So many other things are going on that in a few years we'll find the effects of some of these things. Just like the nuclear plants. Nuclear plants, people know, the government knows that the nuclear waste is very dangerous. They know that a nuclear reactor has a lifespan of about 50 years. But the toxicants can remain up to 1 million years. So they're a little worried what they're going to do when they have to dismantle some of these things. Or what happens if there's an earthquake? And then the whole ground area becomes disrupted and now all this nuclear waste is going into the atmosphere. But there's so much into defense and also saving money. So they're trying to make money and make jobs, so they go on. But now there are other things later that's going to come out about some of these things also. That just the presence of the nuclear energy automatically throws out disturbances in the ethers that affects the immune systems. So there are many, many things that are going on because of man's inhumanity to man, because of commerce. People are just at the mercy. So now, when you're chanting, you are now giving yourself more fortifiedness from the physical and the subtle level also in form of a shield of protection. And that's why we're saying that many things that devotees do are literally for the future, more than actually for the present. So when we chant, then we don't want to just think about we're trying to just save our physical bodies. The body is there and it belongs to God. But we also chanting in the idea of realizing that many, many subtle things in terms of pollution, in terms of thought forms, in terms of radiation, all of these things are becoming more and more contaminating your planet. And we want to be able to move through them and not be so much disturbed by them. Asthma is on the rise again. Tuberculosis. All of these things are becoming plagues again. And it has a lot, and the majority of diseases are due to weakening immune systems that people are having. AIDS itself is like a disease of consciousness, a disease of the times, a disease also of it has a certain amount of chastisement involved because so much of it is coming from improper sex and drugs and whatnot. But even beyond that, it's a disease of consciousness. So there are many diseases now, diseases of consciousness, and so they are on the rise. And disease produces more disease. So there has to be more ways that people can give themselves certain protection as they move throughout all of these kind of arenas. And so the chanting is helping in those ways also. It is both. Ram emphasizes Balaram or Krishna in terms of strength, expansion of Krishna in terms of the strength, and also emphasizes Krishna in terms of an incarnation of Lord Ramachandra. See, so much is contained within the name. It explains in the Brahma Samhita that really all knowledge of the spiritual world is contained within the chanting, you know, of the mantra. And that as one accesses the mantra more and more, then it opens up or gives you the key to be able to open the door that gives us the contact, you know, with the spiritual world. So even though, you know, it may be hard for us to discipline ourselves, because in most cases, you know, we all have that same experience. But we just have to consider something that's important for us. We have to take it in an important way and work it in such a way that it becomes a natural part of our day. Even if somebody's not chanting so many rounds, but just as eating is like a thing that you do regularly. And you don't have to agitate your mind that, well, today, am I going to eat or not eat? How would I have time to work it in? You know, if you find some way, you know, to eat. Any other questions?
Srila Krishna Pat. My question is that I'm kind of very new to Krishna consciousness, and I work in an environment that is filled with Maya, I guess you could say. I mean, every environment is, but this particular environment that I work in is very acceptable of many, many different illusionary states. And
where do you work?
I work at the food co-op in Cleveland. It's a health food store.
Better than most places.
Yes, it is better in that sense of way, but in the sense of what is accepted in the employees, right, and things of that nature. I find that I'm trying to make progress, I guess, in my consciousness, and I have tried to make some changes externally in order to remind myself that I'm trying to make changes internally, but I don't want those changes to be, the externals to be, as you say, like cosmetic. Mm-hmm. For something internally, so I'm seeking some guidance in that area.
Mm. The external things are necessary, but of course, you know, you don't want to do things in such a way that it just agitates others. But at the same time, you want people to know you, to think of you, or to love you as you are. If you have to, you know, smoke with somebody or take some dope with someone, you know, they have someone your friend, then obviously those aren't the kind of friends, you know, that you want. And you want to also to help in conscious raising by being an example of a person who is exploring conscious raising, you know, development schemes, and is able to let people see something by their change of lifestyle. It's important for us, especially in our earlier stages, and that's all of us, it's important for us to have external things that stimulate the internal, or external things that help to remind us and even remind other people. Because see, people will relate to you basically on what they pick up externally. You know, if you're somebody who's like pretty chaste, but you know, every day you come to work, you know, in a pair of hot pants, then even though you may be feeling this way internally, but you're going to be sending out, you know, certain signals to people. So you want to let more and more the externals and the internals sort of match up, so that others relate to you in that way and not oppress you in ways that, you know, a waste of time, but so that it gives you more space, you know, to be natural, to be about those things, you know, that you actually value, in essence. So sometimes it's good that our external situation is a little bit established with people and around in our environments, so that individuals understand that if they're going to be our friends or relate with us as co-workers or whatnot, that they're pretty much clear about what we do and also what we don't do. You know, if men see that you're not so loose, then they're not going to approach you like that. Even if they do at first, and they're going to back away. They're going to feel, you know, she carries herself, you know, very queenly, you know. They'll feel a little bit kind of intimidated to just, you know, come on too gross, you know. Or if people see that you have character, then they'll think, they'll be more encouraged, oh, this is an honest person, this is a truthful person, and, you know, that will, you know, that will radiate. So we do want to have the external in such a way that it reminds others, and then it reinforces us, you know, to grow more internally. Now that we had to put up a, you know, big banner, I am a spiritualist, you know. Nobody should come near my desk. You know, who is an atheist? You know, like that. Any other questions? Anyone else? So we have to be the example by our example, more even than what we say.
On the question of chanting, Ajamil, he chanted without offense, but at the same time he wasn't chanting purely. How is it that he got the result?
Well, first, he previously was engaged in some serious devotion and had some fall, and so he kind of had already made some deposits or some investments. He was able to go back and get those investments. But also, even though at the end of his life he was able to call his son had the name of God, but he did not go back that lifetime. He didn't go back right away. He went back later. It shows that even if we pursue the royal path and fall away of something, that still we've stored so many credits that this life and the next life we can be able to pull off on them. And as many of our credits from previous lives that has gotten many of you to the point now where you're not satisfied just with material or just the cultural, but you want to go deeper into the nature of the soul. That doesn't just happen usually in one lifetime. That's a carryover from some hard knocks from a previous lifetime. But now in some cases, some aspirants will have more trouble because the quality of their devotion was not so strong in the previous life. So that's why you don't lose. If you work hard, you try to be very serious, you really try your best to do according to the scriptures, there's never a loss. Because even if you don't go back to God in this time, then later in this life or the next life, you won't have as many difficulties as the person has who didn't have a strong quality of devotion. You know, for some people, so many things about devotional service life is so difficult. And others, after a few hearings about things, they have a strong sense of understanding, it just feels right, etc. Even sometimes they have like flashbacks in the mood that, I've done this stuff before. Or yes, I was thinking like that. I always thought that way. I never heard it articulated, or I never read it, because it's a part of the carryover from some earlier lifetime. And our best example is sometimes our babies, you know. Babies are born in devotional service. And anyone who looks at them a little close, you can see that they're quite different, you know. Things they respond to, the energy that they carry, it's like so different. And it's because they have come in from having large credits from previous lifetime, and so they unfold very fast since they're having a chance now that from day one they're in a spiritual environment, you know, like the Mukunda Das. I mean, no way a normal baby could be getting all that kind of attention, love. You have a numerologist reading your life, an astrologist getting blessings from Guru, you know, from Krishna, and then all devotees, everyone, you know, coming and giving blessings. It's not just a normal thing, you know. not just a typical birth and such, where this child will never, you know, be exposed to eating meat unless he decides to do it on his own. The child from day one is receiving prasadam, you know, from the mother's body before the baby has come out. The baby has already been hearing about